Every year, it is my pleasure, for the sake of those of you who knew Larry Levis, and for the sake of those of you who never had that opportunity to meet him, to invoke the spirit of Larry Levis on this occasion, which is dedicated to his memory. And I often do that by offering everyone some story about Larry's writing process or some incident from his life that you might not otherwise know. It's been my experience that most writers, and most especially the writers I most enjoy, are great storytellers. Some few, it's true, are rather stiff or even boring personalities when you meet them and are only good storytellers on the page. But again, most of them are every bit as good in person. And of course, the advantage then is that you get to laugh or shake your head in sorrow right along with the teller of the tale. And you can look them in the eye as they speak. Philip Levine is one of those great storytellers. And one evening during a writer's conference, I sat across from Levine and Gerald Stern at dinner as they swapped whoppers. And not only did I laugh myself into painful breathlessness, but I never did get the chance to swallow any of my rather expensive dinner. Philip Levine's greatest student, as he has often said, was Larry Levis. And Larry himself was a superb storyteller, though you had to listen close because the best parts, which he would speak rather softly and swiftly under his breath, almost always involved some slightly demonic appreciation of some twisted aspect of the story that was dark and absurd and very, very funny. A taste for the absurd moment, which is possibly more than a little frightening, but which is also inescapably familiar and deliciously, but not quite viciously hilarious, is something that's a shared quality in all my favorite stories and storytellers. They're not quite vicious, primarily because we can recognize ourselves somehow in the stories they tell. And the stories retain a quality of humanity and warmth, even when the stories themselves are outrageous and divinely ridiculous. When Larry Levis taught at the University of Missouri, the place where I got my own undergraduate degree many years before Larry taught there, he had, as one of his colleagues, the late writer of fiction and poetry, Thomas McAfee. McAfee had been my own teacher when I was a student there, and he certainly was a storyteller who enjoyed the dark and the absurd himself, whether on the page or in person. McAfee was a true eccentric, an utterly strange genius of a kind that academic life hardly permits in its midst anymore at all. And he not only told good, harsh, strange stories, but he also caused many strange stories to be told about himself, like Larry. One of them was about an apartment he rented once in order to write a novel, an apartment he used only for writing. He had painted the masks of comedy and tragedy on the kitchen wall behind the table at which he worked. The legend was told, whether it was true or not, that one day he got up from the unfinished work and, disgusted with it, walked out the door, never to return, yet he continued for decades to pay rent on that same apartment. And that if you could get someone to tell you the right address, you could still walk up the back stairs and look in the window and see the masks painted on the wall and witness the unfinished manuscript still lying there beside the typewriter on the table, waiting the writer's return. Don't we all want to dream we have poems and stories and novels waiting for us somewhere in some room, waiting for us to return? Larry and I often swap McAfee stories. And one night while we were having dinner together, sitting at the bar of a restaurant where a student of ours was the bartender, where of course we liked to go because the conversation was always good, as well as because of eternal writer poverty and we could sometimes catch a free drink, we shook our heads and laughed over a story that Tom McAfee himself particularly loved to tell, and which Larry and I told each other again that night as a way of remembering Tom. Another of McAfee's eccentricities, which both of us enjoyed about him, was that he never would live in an apartment, and surely not in a house, but only in hotels. First he lived in the Daniel Boone Hotel, and later in the Tiger, which is where Tom was still living when he died. If you ask McAfee about this peculiar preference, he might tell you that of course he preferred to live in a hotel. There was room service. Or he might tell you that he liked knowing that the walk home from the bar was never going to be all that bad. If you could just stagger to the elevator, you were home free. Usually, he explained that he loved living in a hotel because it was just like living in heaven. Since, after all, didn't you know that heaven would be just like a hotel lobby? That you could sit there with all that vaulting space and light hanging above you, and you would have a big comfy chair and have long, quiet conversations with friends in a place you never had to clean up yourself? A place where there sometimes would be music, maybe a piano playing, and lots of interesting people coming and going, and when you were always allowed a drink and a cigarette? Larry himself certainly liked that vision of heaven. Tom liked to tell the story, which he had told to both Larry and I, about the night there was a fire in the hotel, and he was awakened from a deep, alcohol-fumed sleep by the night desk clerk, a Chinese man who spoke in a mumble interrupted by shouts, and used to speak some kind of twisted and incomprehensible mix of several approximate languages, which the only person on earth ever to understand was Tom McAfee. Tom rushed to the elevator and down into the street with only his house slippers on and a blanket wrapped around him, and later he was grateful to the young man who came by with hot coffee for all the guests standing around in the cold and the rain. The best part, Tom said, was later they discovered that the kindly young fellow handing out coffee and donuts to the firefighters and the sleepy guests was actually the pyromaniac who had set the fire himself. Often, during those years before his death, which of course none of us who were his friends imagined would ever be described as the years before his death, Larry would tell me stories which later I discovered were on his mind because he was working them into poems. And anyway, as is always the case, one story leads to another, and that night at the bar, Larry told me about another hotel fire, one which featured him riding down in an elevator in his underwear with a group of naked Jamaicans who were members of the reggae group, the Itals, and a rather scary woman who was all dressed up in money, which was pinned all over her clothing. It was a story that was delicious and absurd and a little frightening. And now, rather than have me trying to invoke the spirit of Larry Levis anymore, why don't we just let him do that job himself, and you can look him in the eye yourself.